it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chad Hartman Show, noon to 3. Chad's not here today, but I am Tim Pawlenty, your guest host. And I've mentioned before the break, we have the creator and really the driving force behind a really interesting and I think thought-provoking documentary. It's called A Precarious State. It aired last night for 1 hour. They also have a website called precariousstate.com. And our guest now is Rick Capella. Many of you, most of you will remember him from being on Channel 11, but his career is much deeper and broader than that. And, you know, that by itself was amazing. But he's worked as a journalist both in radio and television across the country in various locations. His work as a journalist has been recognized through Emmy Awards that were given to him and other honors. He's also, by the way, a serial entrepreneur. This is somebody who has envisioned and raised the funds for and started and sold businesses. So in addition to being a journalist, he's got a very extensive early stage and entrepreneurial business background. He's been involved in all sorts of community and nonprofit organizations in Minnesota and elsewhere. And he's also the past chairman of the or past president of the Minnesota chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. Rick Capella, thanks for joining us on WCCO Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you, I know, are busy, and you've been all over the media with this documentary, and you and I have talked about it a little bit off air. But take our listeners behind the scenes as to what inspired you to think about this, and what I know you spent a lot of effort and time and research on this. How did it start, and how did it get to the finish line, which was the airing of the documentary last night?
Yeah, well, it has been a two-year process, which I did not anticipate initially. I thought maybe I'll do a social post, you know. And the more I kept digging on this, it was kind of wild. You know, that whole series of businesses that I was involved in from leaving CARE to the early 20s, we were able to sell several of those, which was awesome, and we had to sadly put one down in the pandemic. And I had a little extra time on my hands, and I got out to see family, went around the country. This is like 23, end of 23, and I hit several cities, and I came back, and it hit me like a brick. You know, I live in Minneapolis, and I've been here for 30-plus years. This is the place I really know and call home, and I knew, you know, we were in a struggle post-pandemic, post-George Floyd, post-rioting, but I didn't really have a full appreciation for the degree to which we were really lagging the nation in coming back in any real meaningful way from that series of challenges we had. It was just that opportunity to see other places and get back here real quick and realize, son of a gun, this is really not improving. And then I started meeting with some friends, business folks. I'd bring them downtown and say, let's just go for a walk through the city, you know. And some of them would call me and do the same and say, let's just go. And I'd say, well, can you just tell me what you see? How do you explain this? And a lot of it was, you know, talking about this is again fall. It was a Q4. It was October, so we're right at 2 years in 23. And they're saying, you know, well, this is just, you know, this is what the post-pandemic thing is everywhere in America. And, you know, this is what work from home does to downtowns. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, it's they're not wrong, but they're not right either. I mean, so I would start ribbing them, you know, you travel, don't you? You're still getting out, you're seeing things. And long short, I just started gathering data. And I'd say one of the first pieces of data that I got my hands on that was like, okay, this is way bigger than we think it is, was this Bureau of Labor Statistics data. And they've been doing what I would characterize as a pre versus post pandemic health checkup on major markets around the country. And what they're doing is they're basically asking a simple question to major market areas here. They're looking at the 12 counties around the Twin Cities that are not the Wisconsin counties, they're only Minnesota counties. And they're saying, where are you today? relative to where you were in February of 2020 with payroll employment. Okay?
Okay.
It's simple, easy to understand. And they would all report their numbers. And, you know, we have forever been very consistent with our market rank, somewhere around 13, right? We're going to come in nationally. And we're on the bottom. Our payroll employment figures today are net negative still from where they were in February of 2020. Meanwhile, you know, so we're ranking anywhere from 42 to 48 out of 49 over the last 2 years. And that puts us in a net negative zone that mostly has been between negative 20,000 jobs and negative 36,000 jobs. Okay? The only market in America performing worse most of the time this year has been San Francisco, economically like this. And that data, meanwhile, the top of that list, you know, is, well, San Antonio. It isn't a red state, but it's in a blue city. It is a blue city. And Austin, I'm sorry, this is a state capital, Austin. And Austin has added 225,000 jobs in the time that we have continued to be net negative for so long. And the top 14 markets in the country have all added way over 100,000 new jobs. So it was this relativism. So it's one thing to look at the relativism as it relates just to ourselves. How did we used to be? Where are we today? But where are we as it relates to the rest of the country has been saddening, frankly. And the whole effort here has been to get at root causes and what are challenges we're facing and what has to be true to turn things around.
I'm talking to, we're listening to Rick Pacella. He is the driving force behind a documentary called A Precarious State, focused on some of the challenges facing Minnesota. It aired last night. It's available at precariousstate.com. Rick, I watched it again this morning, and you know, you go through in the documentary, and your team does, a number of categories. You go through job data. You go through population out-migration, in-migration. You go through the decline of educational test scores. You go through a number of other sort of business startup measures, both statistically and impressionistically, like sort of the downfall of Uptown Minneapolis. But at the end of the day, it's sort of, and I know it's a state measurement, but you're really significantly focused on Minneapolis. At the end of the documentary, you sort of come to some conclusions about why Minnesota, even factoring in COVID, is in relative terms, relative to other similar places, lagging. And in what kinds of conclusions did you reach, and what kind of hope can you give us about how it could get better?
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest changes since the pandemic, particularly in the cities, and this is true for both cities, but it's particularly true for Minneapolis, is that there has been the immediate kind of knee-jerk reaction on the backside of what happened with George Floyd was to run after a concept of defunding the police. We don't need this. We can do this with unarmed violence interrupters. We can be, you know, we'll be just fine without the police. That was a movement that has been is still underway. There was a public vote. The public said, don't do that. But the city council has actually continued to, they still have the power of the purse, right? The city council does for the city. And despite the, you know, their big effort to, hey, let's get an all out kumbaya from the community that they'll vote for defunding police. City people said no. But then what they did was they just turned to this other device they have, which is just controlling the budgets as the city council. And they've continued to just pull 100,000 from here and a million from over there. And they've been doing this all along. And it has put us in a place where crime has become a significant challenge. It's been worse since during the pandemic. But it's been, it's moderating a little. But still, I mean, homicides are up, you know, almost 50% over where they were in 2019 for where we are in the year. And it really, I'd say one of the great challenges we have is the influence of the Democratic socialist agenda on the city council in the city of Minneapolis. Now, maybe the public really wants this. Maybe they know that this is what they have and they voted for this and they want this, which would be really important, I think, for all of the rest of us to know, you know, that this is that this is what our city by majority wants to see happen, because it's a very different world from our democratic approach that we've had for so long in the city. Democratic socialists and democratic farm labor are two very different things. And our research has indicated that the public really has very little understanding of these two very different organizations taking the name Democrat on the city council and driving this agenda, this ideology that really, it's incredible when you really understand what the ideology is and what they are trying to get done as an organization nationally. So the hope is that, you know, people will pay attention to what's happening, that they will associate specific actions with specific outcomes, and that they'll take the action and make the decisions that would bring about the best outcomes. And like I say, maybe that will happen. Maybe, I don't know. This is the big thing I don't know, after 2 years even, is what does this community really want, right? What do they really want? And I think we're going to find out here, you know, even this year is a big year. That city council will be up for election, 100% of them, due to the redistricting, you know, timelines. This is an unusual time that it'll be 100% of the city council re-voted on all at once. But I just don't, I don't know what the public's going to do. Do you?
Well, I don't. I have hopes in that regard. And I want to make it clear, Rick, you have made it clear to me both in public settings and private settings, you're not electioneering. You just started with a concern and you looked at what you believe to be facts and statistics and presented them to create a measurement, again, even factoring in COVID and George Floyd, of that Minnesota's lagging. And then you sort of trace that back to policy decisions. So I want to be clear on your behalf that, you know, you're not presenting this as some sort of electioneering platform. You're just saying this is what the data revealed, and it seems to coincide with certain policy decisions, especially in Minneapolis. Is that a fair summary?
That is very fair.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a short break on WCCO Radio. We're talking to Rip Capcella, the driving force, really the main engine behind this very, very thought-provoking documentary called The Precarious State. Again, precariousstate.com is the website. If you want to watch it, it's available there, as well as some other materials regarding the documentary. We'll be back in a few minutes to talk more with Rick about that very topic.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Chad Hartman Show, guest hosted today by me, Tim Pawlenty. And it's time for a Lindus Construction Time Check. And with Lindus Construction, you can give your home a new look with 50% off installation, both labor and siding, through October 31st. And the time is 12:50. Say, on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, we have Rick Capcella, the driving force behind the documentary A Precarious State. We were talking before the break about the statistical measurements of how Minnesota, specifically the Twin Cities especially, and even more specifically Minneapolis, is lagging even compared to other cities, even after COVID. And Rick, we were talking about what's a way out of this or what's a way to improve it. And I did hear an interview with George Will lately, or not too long ago, where he said he hopes that Mondami wins in New York. This is the Democrat socialist candidate for mayor. Because we need, in his view, isolated examples of how socialism is doomed to fail. And by containing it to a city-level experiment, the rest of the country can see how naive and idiotic it turns out to be. And, you know, for Minnesota to go down that route, I don't, you know, we can't really afford to have our major cities, you know, go down the toilet as an experiment. while we all watch to learn for the future day. So I think we have to be more constructive than that. And I know the documentary didn't focus too much on St. Paul, but you know, when there's not a Wild game or one of the baseball games going or a concert over there, they got just a couple headquarters left, you know, that can be a pretty sad environment there as well. So my hope is that the public will, you know, through their voice, through the elections, will make choices that will result in a better way forward as it relates to policing, as it relates to, you know, a safe environment for people to feel like they can invest and move around and enjoy our cities. And by the way, we've made massive private and public investment in these major cities. Just letting them go down the toilet is not a good plan. So So I'm hopeful that people will wake up to these facts. I think your documentary moves the ball so significantly in that regard. But I want to ask you, as you went through this over 2 years, what surprised you the most? I mean, what finding, besides the net job loss statistics you were citing earlier, was there something else that kind of surprised you that you didn't think too much about ahead of time?
What I think at the end of the day, what the best way to answer that, it was the collection of things. You know, it's not a discrete problem over here or one over there. You know, these are like fundamental functions of government, really, and society more broadly. But when you look at things like public safety, the economy, I mean, these buildings that, you know, we have the highest distress rate in America. We had it in the report last night at 49.7% distressed. Well, I'll be doggone if in the few weeks between, you know, when that got edited in and when it got a left or broadcast, it had gone up to 56.7% is where it is right now. And the nearest number two is 12 points behind, okay, among major markets. And what that distress rate means is that they're facing bankruptcy or they're unable to get new financing, having trouble getting new financing for their loans to keep the buildings. And when you see things like the Ameriprise going down for like 3 cents on the dollar it sold, you look at those kind of major economic moves. You look at the education outcomes where our students are being surpassed by Mississippi and Louisiana in reading scores. It's breathtaking, the scope. And, you know, and then you add just, like I say, police safety to the middle of that, and you have the kind of crime situation we have dealing with. So it's this collection of things that, I was really just perplexed initially. I mean, how many, you know, disparate things could actually be going on at the same time that were that kind of magnitude different. We've been on the opposite end of that. We had the least vacancy in America pre-pandemic. Okay. So and now among the highest. That's the collection. I mean, it's the totality that I found just almost overwhelming.
Yeah, and I know it's a lot for our listeners to consume all at once in terms of the number of things that you flagged in the documentary, but I guess in the short time we have left, Rick, I would flag two that I think are perhaps most important. One is the thing that you've just addressed, public safety. I mean, people cannot have prosperity or security without, you know, they won't invest, they won't dream, they won't take big risks unless they feel safe. They won't even come downtown unless they feel safe or the perception of safety. And the police force is arguably half the size it should be. And, of course, they've got other challenges as well. And I think you cannot have a Lord of the Flies situation where we're going to police ourselves because human nature is such that it turns very challenging very quickly. And, you know, this idea that, you know, defund the police was a good idea. I think it was one of the most devastatingly bad ideas in modern political history. So I think restoring the police departments and making sure we have a safe environment is one. And the second thing I would quickly flag is that educational issue. I mean, we have not even 50% of our students in Minnesota proficient in reading or math at grade level, and you can't have a future where if you can't have the skills or the education necessary to access the private economy, you're in a world of hurt, and then things go very badly for you and your family. And so we have to get Minnesota back to, regardless of anybody's politics, we have to agree that having half of our kids not being able to read and do math at grade level is a preposterous place for Minnesota to be. And I think those are fixable, bipartisan things that most people would agree to.
I aspire to your level of articulation on these things. I'm still getting there.
Oh, no, you are there. But, well, we appreciate you. I know you came on, you were trying to get out of town for another thing, so we want to be respectful of your time. But I really encourage our listeners, regardless of your political view, to at least look at this. I think it presents really helpful information from a data and statistics standpoint. Again, it's a precarious state. And did I have the website right, Rick? Is it precariousstate.com?
That is right.
Okay.
That is correct.
Anything else you want to say in closing, or did we cover it well enough?
No, I think you've really covered it. I really do appreciate it. And I would just hope that, you know, each of us can kind of look at what is our responsibility in trying to better our environment, and to think through those things and to act on those things in ways that can help lift up the community, because at the end of the day, it's about the people, and we need all of us to get it right.
Well, well said. Well said. Enjoy your Minnesota weekend, and enjoy your time finally getting this documentary done, and we appreciate you being on WCCO Radio.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have another guest that I think you're going to enjoy, and that is Rochelle Olson, who is with the Star Tribune, and she has cheers and jeers and other insights regarding the Minnesota landscape politically and otherwise. So hope you'll continue to listen. We'll be right back after this.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.